Welcome to Unstandardized English. My name is Dr. J.P.B. Gerald. I am the host of this show. We talk about the racially, linguistically, and neurologically minoritized. On this episode, you're going to hear from my friend, Sarah Levine, who is from Long Island, and she's going to talk about it. She's also a podcaster, an experienced podcaster. I met her through her podcast, and we became friends because I realized she lived here, and I was like, I like friends. So we're friends. That's kind of it. On the other front, though, I was talking about my first book in every episode and put the link in the show notes, and now my second book, you can pre-order it. It will not be released until August, but you can pre-order the book. It's got some blurbs from some big, interesting people. I was on a panel last week talking about it, and it's just, I don't know what's going to happen with this book. This is really different from the last one, because the last book, I really had to push myself, and I'll still be promoting this one, and you'll hear it on here, all 50 of you who listen to this show, but it was really... There are people finding me through LinkedIn mostly, and Twitter also, or X or whatever, but mostly LinkedIn, which is the professional network, they say. And, like, they're just hearing about me. Somebody found me and told me that their advisor suggested the book, a book that hasn't come out yet, which means her advisor hasn't read it yet, but they're just hearing about this book. And I think that it makes me kind of sad in some ways that, like, I've looked at this and said, I got to write this book, and this book is written in a really accessible way. It's just stories. It's not didactic at all. But that this book hadn't been written yet or hadn't been published yet. I don't understand. I'm not that innovative where I'm the first person to ever have an idea. And yet between this and my writing about whiteness and language teaching, I have been the first to do certain things. And that's not really me being amazing. That's the industry's being myopic. So, all right. Now you're going to hear from Sarah. Hope you enjoy the show.
While we're recording. So I used to co-host this podcast called Am I the Asshole? And Justin was a listener, and we realized that we both lived in the same neighborhood, and we were like, let's be friends. And actually, I've met a lot of people that way. I've made a lot of friends through podcasts, which is, I guess, kind of weird, but it's worked out.
Yeah, she doesn't, to be clear, the podcast still exists. She's just not on it anymore.
That's true.
Because when you say, I used to be on a podcast, it sounds like...
Oh, like one time.
It also sounds like the podcast stopped.
Oh, yes. The podcast is great and it's still going and you guys should listen to it. But I'm just not on it anymore.
I've been on the podcast, both with her and without her. Yes, so, exactly. You know, it was fun time. That was the first time we talked, actually. It was.
That's true.
And then as things started to continue to reopen, you know... She joined me and my colleagues last summer and my intern, who I just wrote a letter of recommendation for her MBA program.
She was cool.
Yeah.
Should I come closer to the speaker?
The speaker is the computer. So, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, sure.
The weird thing is, like, the visuals are everywhere, but the audio is the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So, Long Island. So to set the scene, when my wife and I decided we were going to look for a house, we knew we couldn't afford anything in the city that wasn't a pit of garbage.
You know,
or Staten Island.
Yeah.
So same thing.
Literally,
it's like a garbage island. Like I'm not even talking about the politics and all that, which is true, but also like it's literally an island of garbage. When I used to go through Staten Island as a kid, it would just smell bad.
Oh.
Because it was landfills. We weren't hanging out there, we were just driving to Philadelphia. Because my mom's family's from Philadelphia and we lived in Brooklyn, so that's just how you get there, right? They have since done like just landfill technology has improved so much that like when you go past landfills, it doesn't tend to smell that bad anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the 90s, it was just like, you have to roll up the windows. So it's such a garbage island, right? So if you're going to leave the city, but still work in the city, you can go three ways, right? You can go west, you can go north, you can go east. West and south are kind of the same thing. They're both New Jersey. But because of the ocean, there's only three directions.
Yes.
Right? We considered all three. And we just very quickly dismissed Long Island. We talked about that for like 3 days, right? Like
it's actually longer than I would think.
Well, because we looked at it and like, obviously Long Island is very close to the city.
Yes.
But like, they're all close to the city. And like, depending on where you work and where you want to spend your time, there's different distances. Cause like, we'll be close to the five boroughs, but we have to go through the Bronx to get here. It's not a bad thing. It's just, it takes a little bit extra time. New Jersey is the closest to Manhattan, but not where you can afford the phone. Because you got to go past the part that's right next to Manhattan to be able to afford this. And we really were focused on New Jersey for a long time until we switched back to going north. But Long Island, we considered like Valley Stream for a second. And we were looking at the demographics and so forth. That was obviously very important to me. And we know that the inner ring areas of Long Island are very close on the Long Island Railroad and stuff like that. But I didn't want to be in Long Island. I just want to be there. And when I think about the place, you know, I think about, I mean, sometimes it's hard in my head to disentangle Nassau and Suffolk because, you know, they're not the same at all.
I honestly don't know much from Suffolk County because I grew up in Nassau.
Suffolk is, it's like, Suffolk is weird.
I feel like, Suffolk is like, obviously further out on the island from where I am, and it's just like, yeah, you get into like Long Beach area and just like, it's interesting.
And, but like Suffolk has not Montauk, and Montauk is so nice, so pretty.
Yeah. Hey. Who lives in, like, I wouldn't want to live in Montauk either.
Well, you can't because it's a 3-hour train ride.
Yeah.
And like, the Montauk train also goes to Long Island City. Like that's the only train that's the only train that ends there. It's the like double decker sleeper train. It's not really a sleeper. 3 hours is not 10 hours. But like, sometimes when my son and I just go and watch trains, which we haven't done in a while since he got a scooter, he's like, I don't mean stroller anymore. Stop this. As soon as he got the scooter, he's like, no stroller. They kid hasn't been in a stroller in months. Which is cool because we move faster now. Right? But then I have to carry it. The whole point of the stroller is I could put stuff in. We just go watch that train. I miss watching the train. We still sometimes watch the train, but it's more of like, we'll go to Forest Hills and watch the Long Island Railroad. This is the way I spend my time. So anyway, Montauk's really nice, and the Hamptons are in Suffolk, right? My godmother owned a house in Natatuck, which is way the fuck out there, like past Riverhead. And that was nice. But it's also like terrifying to be in Suffolk, you know.
It's very like, you can definitely see Trump paraphernalia out there. I mean, you see that in Nassau too, but I think it's definitely like.
Well, wasn't it Nassau? Didn't George Santos represent Nassau?
Oh, my district. Let's go. Not literally, but it's fun because, I feel like I shouldn't have missed this on the podcast, but like for so long, I had just put off changing my voting registration because I lived with my parents when I first moved back to New York City or to New York. And like, you know, I would go vote in the elections and stuff. And then like, I finally switched it to the city and everything. And then George Santos wins. And I was like, oh my God, like I should have kept it. Should have committed some voter fraud.
I remember in 2004, my second year of college, friends of mine drove another friend of mine to Florida so she could vote.
Jeez, drove?
From New Jersey, right?
Why wouldn't you fly or whatever?
They didn't have any money, right?
Okay, that's, that's dedication. Yeah. I can
didn't matter.
Right, right.
That was the one Bush won, like really.
Yeah.
It wasn't that close. Yeah.
Okay, now I feel less bad about going to...
You were in New Jersey, right? I wasn't going to switch my registration from New York to New Jersey.
Yeah.
I had to switch it back.
That's so annoying.
I turned 18 in 2004. That was the first presidential election. And then in 2008, I voted in the primaries before I left, but I left the country in February. It was like Super Tuesday. I actually left on Super Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
And I heard that like Obama had surprisingly won a whole bunch over Hillary, right? And I was just like, huh. And I was watching that at the airport. The CNN report of Super Tuesday with Lala was like waiting for my plane. So everything happened while I was away. It's funny the things that get transmitted overseas. Like obviously everybody's the internet, but it wasn't nearly as fast as it is now. You can get everything you want and you didn't have a smartphone. And, I asked people, my students after a while, who was running for president, and they just, they hear the same phrases over and over again. They said, oh, Obama, Hillary. That was the phrase they were hearing. So anyway, so back to Long Island. So I had a friend. We're not friends anymore. I say I had a friend like she died. She did not die. But we're not friends anymore. And she doesn't listen to this, so I'm going to say what I'm going to say. So, like, I don't think she knows I have about this. So she and I, we met while I was in Korea, and I was trying to sort of, I said, I'm not coming back here. I don't have any friends. Like, I need to build this up before I get back, right? Same way, like, when things were in lockdown and I was starting to emerge and I got the diagnosis, I was like, I need to rebuild my friendships and, like, so I don't just go out there and be like, yeah, who am I gonna talk to? You know? And I need a soft landing. So I met her on like on a dating site, but we immediately were like, no. So we like, let's be friends. So we met, and why did I say that twice? And turned out she's from Long Island. And at one, she kept urging me to come visit her family and then urging my other friends to come visit. So we all went out there one weekend in 2012. And like, she's from Seacliff. You know where Seacliff is?
Literally, no.
It's like right there though.
Okay.
I think we got off at Huntington, maybe?
Nice, okay.
Not, so it's not far, you know?
Yeah, that's like an hour.
So anyway, we went to their house and we like went, you know, she's a nice little house, you know, whatever. It's a little town. And so for fun that night, we went to the town bar.
Ooh.
You know, and I was talking to somebody. Not like that, but like I was just speaking to a young woman. And then I forget what the woman's name was. And then I go back to my friend's house and her younger sister was there. And I was saying, you know, I was talking to somebody at the bar. Like, what's her name? And I say the person's name. And she's like, oh, crazy person's name. And I'm like, because everybody knows everybody. And I was like, see, this is the worst. You know, it's like, how do you have the small town vibe, but you're like a foot from New York, because you could see New York depending on where you were. You could, it's like face, you know, it's like facing Westchester kind of thing.
Okay.
Long Island Sound. And like, I don't want that. I don't want it to be that small. Like, I want a community. And obviously, your block is something we're gonna have now that we have the house. But like, I don't want everyone in the entire town to know me. I don't want to stand out demographically that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I want to stand, I want to stand out for reasons that I want to stand out. I don't want to stand out just cause.
Yeah, totally. That's interesting. I guess my high school was pretty small. Like there were like 300, 350 people in my graduating class.
My entire high school had
350 people. Oh, wow. Oh, right. Yeah. I never felt like it was a small town, but I guess people did. Like you knew who most people were, I thought, but then I was looking back at my yearbook recently and I was like, I have no idea who this person is, who this person is, like literally no recollection. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because the thing about the college was like, Princeton's not that big at the college,
mm-hmm.
but it's a lot bigger than a 75 person graduating class.
Oh my God. You really can't hide in that. Like if you don't like somebody, they're going to know.
Right. But in the same way, like unless you truly transgress, I went to that school for so long that they couldn't read. Like, unless they really did something, like, yeah. Like, I knew you before, like, you know, which can be good and bad, because then you can't escape the fact, like, there were people I would see, and I'd run into them when we were in our 20s, and I would refer to them by a diminutive name, like, you know, calling somebody Katie, whose name is Catherine, right?
Yeah.
They're like, no, I'm Catherine. And I'm like,
are it you? Never was like, oh, you got pants, or like, oh, you had an accident, and now we... You know, everybody knows you as a kid who had an accident when they were 7 and you're like 18 now.
I mean, it probably happened to some people, but it didn't really happen to me because I was concerned about my social standing that I tried. So I think people thought I was this little tryhard who didn't quite fit in, but they weren't really, my teachers were meaner to me than my classmates were, which is what the book is about. And I'm the same, nothing ever happened, but it wasn't all that personal. At least it didn't feel personal. I took it all personally, but in retrospect, it wasn't so much about me. It was them not understanding the way my brain worked and this and that. And I don't know why I'm letting my peers off the hook, but I just feel like they were children. And like beyond a certain, like if you get beyond a certain point, sure, like true bullying and so forth. But like I give people a lot of grace when their brain isn't there yet either. You know, again, to a point, right? And, you know, beating somebody up or, you know, like calling somebody, that didn't happen to me. So, it was Maryland. I got lucky in that sense, but it was also such a small school, you couldn't pop.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a way, you couldn't. What are we talking about? Long Island. Anyway, so, this is what me on the show is like, I just can't focus. So, that is what the D is. Well, there's two D's, but that's what one of the D's in ADHD is for. The second one is disorder. So, you know, I dated somebody in Long Island once, but like literally once, like mm-hmm. we went on one date.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, literally once. And this is when I was young. I was like 18 and like, this was a really hard summer for me. So I never had a driver's license because why? I lived in Brooklyn. I only ever got a driver's license because my mom moved back to Pennsylvania when I was in college. She had just moved back to Pennsylvania at this time, and I wasn't spending time there. So I didn't have a license saying, hey, if I go to my mom's Pennsylvania, I'd be stuck in her house. Mm-hmm. And so I would spend the time. So basically, we bought the house. It's kind of like what I just did just now, except this is a month, and that was 4 months. So we closed on the house in Pennsylvania in May, and then we didn't move out of the house in Brooklyn until August.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas this time we closed last week and we will be moving out at the end of April. We're just doing a few things to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, we had two houses for like 4 months. And I finished school in May, like a person does in college. And I went back there and I had seen, so I didn't have the kind of focus on like finances, partially because of privilege and also because I didn't know what I wanted to do, where I knew it was like, I'm going to do that this summer. And so, I just saw one of those signs that said, you can make this much, like knowing now, like that's some bullshit.
Those signs on the side of the road, you're yeah. like, oh, that's my scam.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those, it was a canvassing.
Oh, God.
And so, and it was in France, which like, so I went to Princeton every day.
Wow.
From New York, right? And like spent the money, like my parents would give me money to get on the train, and then I would be like, you better pay for this yourself, right, to get on the train. So I went all the way to Princeton. And this was, it was afternoon because we needed people to get home from work.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we would, the job was, like, 4 to 9.
Oh, my God.
And we would be walking around from, like, 5 to 8, right? And I would get on the last, not the last train. I think they didn't have trains until 2 in the morning. But, like, you know, it was a train, one train. It was time of day when there was one train an hour.
Okay.
And, like, I get on the train at, like, 10 and get back. I only lasted 1 week. I'm really bad at it. Like, in retrospect,
yeah.
In retrospect, understanding neurodivergence and how much it, like, hurt me for them to reject me, but I know understand that they were rejecting what I was doing. I experienced a level of racism I hadn't experienced before, right? Because I opened the door. And someone saying no, it's not racist. Yeah, even if you close the door in my face. I don't want someone to talk to me, right? Because I get annoyed now, right?
Yeah.
And they have the tactics. You're in the subway. They're like, can I ask you a question? I'm like, no,
I'm
you
like,
no. You can't.
But I will say one time I had to do that in an assignment for journalism school. And I was like, I'm everything I hate right now. But what I did was post up at the park because I was like, okay, I'm not really bothering you. You're sitting on a bench.
Right.
But yeah, no, now I just feel so much sympathy for people whose job is to like stand on a street corner.
Yeah, no, I say that to them. I'm like, I used to do this.
Yeah.
I can't stop right now. Good luck.
Yes.
Cause like, you know, cause I was 18.
Yes.
And so, but then there were people where I knocked on the door and some person said, you're not supposed to be here.
Ew.
And I'm just like, huh? They're like, you're not allowed to be here. And
wow.
I'm like, okay. Now, again, there are places where you're not allowed to be because they'll say no solicitation, but the company knew enough, like they didn't put us in those places, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't drive us to places where there was no solicitation allowed, right?
Right.
So like, I was allowed to knock on the woman's door,
yes.
Right? And then she said, if you come back here, I'm going to call the police. I'm just glad she didn't call the police because another person who was black had the police call them and were walking around.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so there was that. And almost all of us were people of color, and the managers weren't. Like, you know, it's just these things you realize when you know the studying I've done and so forth. So anyway, lasted a week. They fired me because I wasn't bringing enough money. And, you know, I like cried in the bathroom.
Aw.
And I was like, well, shit, I gotta go get my fucking train and go home, right? So, like, it was late, right? So they rushed me to the train because I went ahead and sit in the station for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the next day was my birthday, which is great. Cause yeah, when I started the job, I was actually 17. And so then I didn't do anything else. I had nothing to do. I didn't have any money. And like, I couldn't really go out because I was 18. And I didn't really have a lot of friends from high school. It's such a small school, and I had a small group of friends. So they were doing stuff. So I just sat on the computer all day. And this is the first year Facebook existed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, but it was in such an, like a fetus form.
Was that like when you had to get invited?
I had been invited.
Ah.
But it was a few months after that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was invited by a woman who has worked for now Meta for like 10 years. Right. She didn't. Like, she was my classmate.
Okay.
But it turned out now that she has since worked there for like a decade, which I just think is funny. So anyway, I would just refresh it because this is the first time there's been social media. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know what Friendster, and I had not heard of MySpace yet. It existed, but I had not heard of it. And I just refreshed for like people in New York to meet. Right. And I never really met anybody. So I spent the entire summer doing that and also still on AIM.
Okay.
All this is to say, one of the people I met was this person from Long Island. This is how I got to this point. And she invited me out with her family to a softball game.
That's so bold. Like, she did it. You were an internet stranger?
She invited me out with her family to a softball game. And she was very nice.
Yeah.
But it was like a weird situation.
That's really weird on many levels.
Yeah, and I'm just like, okay.
Was it like a high school softball game? Like, what are we talking about?
No, like her grandparents, she was like a giant Italian family, right?
Oh, okay.
Which is like, I'm not saying that negatively, my wife's family is half Italian, right? So I'm just saying, but this was like the entire family's there, and here's this black guy. None of them were mean to me. I'm not trying to say this negatively. But.
That's just such a weird event.
Yeah.
Someone to.
I'm like, this isn't great. So, but the point is, though, we were driving through areas where I just was like very uncomfortable. They weren't doing this. They weren't doing it. I had no problem with these people that I was out there.
Yeah,
I was just saying the experience I had there. And then I think about the experience I had there in the small townness. But the real reason, of course, is the research I've done and like places like Levittown where there was such strict, you know, housing exclusion.
Oh yeah.
Right. And the experience I had in 2020 when I spent way too much time arguing with people online, but we all did because like, well, what else was there to do? Like, you couldn't go anywhere. And I remember during the Cuomo time, right, when we were all watching the death numbers and we just needed something to do, and I didn't know what to do with myself, right? I'm online, and it was the only time I was ever in Reddit or New York City.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just looking at the death numbers, right?
Yeah.
Like, what else do you do? And as they finally started to go down, we started talking about future, and we were predicting and all this stuff, and I mentioned. And then, like, we got to May and June when the numbers really started to go down. People started to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people were talking about summer. But then the racial conversation was starting to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, that's what my article is starting to go around. And I was talking about the racism of Long Island. And this guy pointed out, he's like, what are you talking about? Long Island is so diverse. And I'm like, yeah, if you put the whole island together.
Yeah.
And then I realized that my issue with Long Island, and this is not a specific to Long Island thing, but I do think it's a very, like, inner ring suburbs of major city thing is that, especially with the way the costs are, and not just now, but for the last several decades, everybody wants the same comfortable life for their families if they have one, whatever. And a lot of the time you can't really do that in certain ways in the city. So you go to an external suburb. I'm moving to a city. It just happens to seem like a suburb because it's next to New York City. Right? Like, Newark isn't a suburb. Yonkers isn't really a suburb. They're just next to New York.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the places in Long Island they're not nearly as big. There's no 200,000 city in Long Island, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to move your family there, quote unquote, American dream and all this stuff. And people do tend to live near, for non-racist reasons, people who are similar to them, right? There's racism under it sometimes, but like, if an Italian person was living in Italy, or a Haitian person was near Haitian, like, that's not
right.
But it's that you see, it's like, well, that's a black suburb, and that's a Hispanic suburb.
Mm.
And that's whereas in a city, it might be a black neighborhood, Hispanic neighborhood, you know, or even more specific, Ecuadorian neighborhood or Korean neighborhood. But you're still in the same city, and therefore you depend on each other to some extent, which is what I like about cities. Yeah. Even if people hate each other, they need each other because taxes, like just financially, they depend on each other. Whereas in the suburbs, you're like, or a small town, there aren't as many places where the population is, let's say, under 50,000 that are super diverse. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could be not diverse, that it's all black or all Hispanic or whatever. And I know Hispanics are not the same thing as a race people. But then you see so much of that in Long Island. It just seems to alternate between white town, black town, Latino town, whatever. And I found it much more pronounced there than in similar places. Like, surely there are super white parts of Westchester, but it's more the farther you get, the whiter it gets. Whereas in Long Island, you'll get that mix immediately. You'll get the white town, black town, like as soon as you cross the border. Anyway. So that's, and I'm just wondering, like, when you think back, because you probably weren't thinking too much about it, like, did you notice anything like that, or you think back to now and realize stuff about it?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, my town, I mean, was very Jewish, but also very, like, a lot of big Jewish population, big Asian population, mostly, like, Korean. And I think the thing about Long Island is, like, you don't realize how segregated it is, but I was just reading a study. I mean, the data could be old, but there was a point where, like, Long Island was the third most segregated suburb, like, in the country. And, yeah, I just think people don't realize that. And I didn't either, I feel like.
Well, because, and so people will say that about major cities too, right? And and New York is very segregated. All these cities are segregated. I think that there is a difference between enforced segregation and enclaves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think, you know, saying that Flushing is an Asian neighborhood does not make Flushing segregated by itself. Like, segregated because the word was used as a legal policy for centuries, or really a century after slavery, right? When we say segregation, we tend to mean that. Mm-hmm. But the word literally just means separation. Like, it inherently racist, right? And, you know, it's the enforced segregation that's a problem, where you're not allowed to, et cetera. Class segregation happens inherently, and I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying, like, some places are more extended than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it were simply just the money, I'm not saying it's okay, but it wouldn't be racist, right? If it was like, this house is more expensive than this house, and if you can afford this house and you buy it, great. Well, that's not good per se, but it has nothing to do with the person's identity,
mm-hmm.
right? But all the studies are showing that, like, the realtors will only show you these houses,
yes.
And your appraisal will be this much, right? Because all the stuff I just went through, you know, and it'll be appraised as this and this and this, if these are the things. Like, that really shows how these things build up. And, you know, it can be, I think that when the populations get smaller, right, in each area, then the segregation, especially when it gets more car-based, because Long Island is car-based within Long Island, but to get to the city is, right? Like, it's like, to get east and west, you can get on the train, but to go up and down, right? Or within Long
Island. Anywhere, like, if you want to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. But my point is that, like, in a place like New York, where you can take public transportation to places, I don't notice segregation as much.
Hmm.
Like, it, you will never be a person who takes public transportation in New York and the, like, as heartbreaking as to see people who are in dire circumstances when you're on public transportation, those will not be the only black people you see. You may stereotype it into that, but there will be other black people on the train. And there will be, even if you see a lot of migrants, there will be other people who look like them on the train, right?
Yeah.
Your brain could turn it into some racism, but it's not going to be a case where that's all you see. And I like that about New York, because when I see tourists come here, and they still come here in droves, the Europeans, first of all, Europeans are always on the subway, because that's what they do in Europe, right? They're like, I'm not taking a taxi.
No.
Right? And so they're all having a good time. Whenever I see Europeans on the subway, they're like, oh, this is fun. And there's, well, it's like 3.5 feels good, right?
I know. And we have a reputation for being loud.
Yeah. But they're just sitting there, just, oh, right? Because mm-hmm. they have great public transportation over there. But the point is they're not driving if they can help it. And, but if you're from a different place, you don't even ever have to see people who don't look like you. Right? And you don't even have to do that intentionally. I buy a house in this place. It's a quote unquote place that schools, right? And you're not thinking about any of this stuff. You're not intentionally moving your family away from people of color, right? I just saw some friends who bought a house in Golden, Colorado, which is where Coors was founded.
Nice.
Right? And, you know, I every time I see friends mention they bought a house, I look up the demographics just to see, right? And like, any place that's like 90% white happened on purpose. Because it's not like the country started with that. So like, no matter where it is, people had to get moved out. And then when they decided what it was gonna be, there were no jobs there, so therefore there was no reason in the Great Migration for people of color to move there. Mm-hmm. Which is its own thing. If you move to a place where there aren't any jobs, it means you're just trying to move to a place where there aren't any people. Or, there's jobs there and they just didn't let you live there. Right? Mm-hmm. Cause when I was looking around at like teaching and professor jobs a few years ago and I didn't know what I was going to do, is the romantic part of me that wanted to be a full-time professor? I teach sometimes, but like, it's not my main thing. And like, I'd look at these college towns and I'm just like, I understand that the campus itself is going to be somewhat diverse because they do that on purpose. They want to bring in people from different places, right? And Princeton was more diverse than my high school. Even though it's not that diverse a place, they still make a point, like you will not see only white people there, right? It's simply true. My high school, the town I was in was diverse, Brooklyn, but this high school wasn't, which was the opposite in Princeton, where Princeton itself isn't particularly diverse, but the school was, right? I'm not saying they're perfect at it, but this is also 20 years ago at this point, which is silly to think about. So I knew any job I got when I was on a college campus, my colleagues, to some extent, people around, you know, my son would see some people, right? But when you get into town, and I guess the question becomes, what's more important, the workplace or the town? But if you're a professor, your life is the workplace.
Right.
And then like, you know, if you do meet people of color there, which people of color are you meeting? Right? They're college town people of color or who are, there are other professors too. And that would have been fine in some way. But like, I remember looking at a job at the University of Rhode Island and the town that it's in, which I think is West Warwick, was like 93% white. I'm like, how did this happen? I mean, I know how it happened. But like, I'm just looking at that. I'm just like, I don't want him to be the only one in his class, right? He happens to be the only black kid right now, but there's in the daycare he's leaving, but there's plenty of Latin kids and a couple other Asian kid left, but, he's definitely, it's not like everyone's white, right? And he's not old enough to really, he understands colors, but he doesn't fully understand, right? I've been talking about it actually. And then he gets it wrong. It's like, oh, she's black. And he just needs, cause he means I like that person. I'm like, oh. But, so yeah. And like, these are all, like I said, they're college towns. So they'll be progressive to some extent, but like, it got really hard for me to put, and also those applications to college jobs are so absurd, you know, it's the same way that it would be for a client, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, I can't put effort into this nonsense.
I don't play for you.
Yeah, you know, because like, I don't believe it. And then they want you to write a diversity statement. And I'm like, I literally write about racism. Why do you want me to do this? And then, you know, and then all these calls for new scholars who write about race and racism in the last few years. And who's heading the search committees? Two white ladies. Yeah. And I'm just like,
well, now those programs are getting cut, so.
Well, it depends on where you are, right? No. what's happening is, it's not a decrease, it's a separation, right? Like, there's going to be more and more research here and less over there. Because, like, we're in New York, and I'm not saying there are issues, but we're going to be talking about it, at least, right? And then you'll just go to certain places, and the less diverse it is, because like that isn't happening in places that are at least localities that are more diverse. The people are getting mad, but they're just getting, they're getting voted. They're not winning. Those Moms for Liberty aren't winning elections in places where they have a majority minority population. Broadly speaking, I'm sure there's some exceptions to that. Like, aside from like the Cubans in Florida, I don't know what they're doing. But like the point is like, yeah, they can win in Utah, they can win in New Hampshire too, super white up there. Mm-hmm. But like, those people, they may get one person on a school board, but they're not going to be running the school board in like Brooklyn or something like that. You know, so like they're getting cut at a lot of these schools, a lot of these places, but it's more, I find that what's happening is just a, just like it's getting state by state, locality by locality where I'm comfortable being. But on the other hand, no matter what, there's too much news. No matter what goes on, these huge things happen. But from day to day, people are just living, which is still true.
Yes.
And I sometimes forget that. I went to Texas right after the Dobbs ruling, right? And I'm like, oh, man, there's going to be all these signs. And it's like, nope. I mean, I was just like, to be clear, I was in Dallas, which is terrible of a place. But it's still a city.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you look at the demographics, it's like they tend to still vote Democratic in Dallas. I'm not saying that's the end all and be all, but like major cities still tend to be different than, you know. But like, first of all, out in the country, they didn't tend to have both billboards in the first place. And like, you can see a lot of the issues, but I'm just in the restaurant and like, you don't really notice anything because people are just like, I gotta go to work. Like, this is terrible. I gotta go to work.
Right.
You know, I can be, you know, I think about that sometimes with academics. As academics, spend a lot of time thinking about stuff, because we're both, well, full-time academics. They're both busy and not busy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they only did their jobs, and I think sometimes the reason they are like this is because their jobs don't pay enough, which I understand. If they only did their jobs, they'd be really free. Like, just the bare minimum of their jobs, mm-hmm. they'd be really free. But the pressure to do this and this and this and this means they take on more and more projects, so they're not free. But all they do is they want to spend time, and there's a purity, and I know if some of the academics listen to this, stop contributing to my Patreon, because I say this shit. Oh, no. But like, hey, that's like a meal. Yeah. So, you know, there's just so much energy from academics on important stuff without the practicalities.
Mm.
Because like, and then, you know, you read the clickbait articles from like Slate or Salon, I guess Slate, I get them confused. I think Salon is the one that actually functions, right? Slate, yeah. Salon's the one with, Slate.
Yeah, I don't read Salon that much.
Slate's the one with the advice columns and the up in the Dear Prudence, right? So Slate, and then every time something happens, they'll write like, so there was a Supreme Court ruling about like concealed carry in various places that applies to New York, and then the article, the Supreme Court just turned New York to the Wild West.
That's so annoying. Oh my God.
I'm just like. Right? Because then if it doesn't, but the thing is, when people make predictions and they don't come true, nobody calls them out 2 years later.
Right.
Because if you make a 5-year prediction and it doesn't happen, no one remembers what you said 5 years ago.
No one's going to remember. Unless you do the like, remind me thing on Reddit, but like, no one's going to remember.
The only time it happens is in like sports, because that's a contained season. It's like, by the end of the season, the team will have this many wins. Yeah. And then they compare it from the, or like awards, because it's like a year, right?
Yeah.
It's like, and that's like, it's like part of it. You say, I predict this will happen. Oh, they got snubbed or whatever, right? But like, people thinking about societal trends, it's just like, I understand that that ruling is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not going to take people who didn't have guns and just go like, well, I'm gonna get them. Like, the people who did not want to have guns will continue to not want to have guns. And the people who had them, it just means that they will be able to bring them to other places, but they're not going to just start murdering people, right? That's what, like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
I'm not saying these things don't matter, but I'm just saying, like, I don't understand why people think that, because it's what I realize is that policies matter because people don't want to get in trouble. But policies don't matter in the sense that they don't necessarily change people's brains that much, right? Like, not quickly.
Well, unless you were the person who was, like, only not doing something because it's technically illegal.
But, right. And the question, and it's like the hassle factor of, like, how much of this is going to matter.
Right.
Right? You know? Because, like, the one thing I noticed is that, like, in late 2021, I was back in the office at my last job. I was in the World Trade Center. It was a food court. I would go there, and then in, like, November, took off the mask mandate. And they didn't wear any masks. Omicron came.
I hated when they did that.
Yeah. But then Omicron came, put them all back on. I'm like, so yeah. you just go on flip-flop, based yeah. on what they said. Because they're just like, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah.
Because for things like that, they're like, well, I don't want to get in trouble. Right? Yeah. But as far as, like, will I murder somebody today? It's not going to be because of the policy.
You're right. Yeah.
It's like, well, I was going to, you know.
Yeah. No, that's.
And I hate headlines like that because, like, also, first of all, the Wild West wasn't nearly as wild as they say it was. I mean, she's not true. They weren't just, I mean, like, you know, some people got shot, but they weren't just doing that. It wasn't just like everyone's just running around shooting each other. It just wasn't the case.
Bummer.
And, like, humans evolve so slowly, though.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's not like there was a time when it truly was that, like, because even animals, I mean, eating each other. But they don't just go around murdering each other for fun. Some do, but it's aberrant behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's like, huh. You know, and it's like, if you threaten my thugs and then, you know, kind of thing. But, like, there's not, like, animal serial killers, right? Where they're just like, you know, like, there's some, yeah. you know, they, not in the same way. Right?
For sure.
So Long Island. Speaking of serial killers.
Oh my God, seriously, my dad, like, sent me a picture. He works in Massapequa, which is a town over from Massapequa Heights or something like that. Yeah, where that guy was. And sent me a picture, like, when he drove by because everything was all blocked off, like, when they caught him at his house. Which also, I'm like, it's pretty wild that people are still serial killing right now. Like, in the 2020s, like, I don't know.
Not nearly as many.
There's not as many, which is great. I feel like in the 70s, all you had to do to not get caught was, like, not have anyone see you actively murdering.
Right.
And now, I'm like, how are you? It was wild that he was able to get away with it for so long. Although, you know, he was killing sex workers.
He was sex workers.
And the police officials were corrupt and did not see the victims as humans. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot, because it's true. Like, there's so much true crime stuff, as you know. but it's the same way that, like, because I don't know why I do this. I think it because I now fly a lot for work. I calm myself down by watching analysis of plane crashes.
Oh, right? God. Seriously?
Because what I realize is that, first of all, it never happens. Like, if you actually look at it,
yeah.
it like, actually, like, in terms of how many planes there are in the sky, it never happens.
We did have this conversation because I was freaking out before I took a trip.
Yeah.
Because I was supposed to fly on a MAX 9, and then they switched it to a MAX 8, and then there was a glitch.
Yeah.
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 Like, these planes are all recalled. Like, I almost did not go.
Yeah.
My sister texted me yesterday and was like, which plane should I avoid? And I was like, oh, I got you.
Yeah. But even with all of those, like nobody died. Like, with the MAX, the window came.
With the 9, yeah.
Yeah, nobody. But they just.
The 8.
Yeah. They just, yeah. But the point is, though, when I watch these things, almost every plane crash, and this is like a whole subset of YouTube. Like, okay. Plane crash YouTube. And it's like these people make animations. They feature the actual distress calls from the pilots.
Oh,
yeah. But every single one of these things, if it's a big plane, it's before 1987. There's like a few after it, right? Like the TWA in Long Island, that was 96. Yeah. But like, there's a few after it, after like 9/11, or it's a tiny, right?
The MAX 8s were crashing and killing like hundreds of people. It was like two.
Yeah, there was two. Yeah. But so many things have to go wrong for a plane crash, is my point.
Yeah.
So many things, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, all the things I'm realizing is that, like, generally speaking, how did anyone fly in the '80s?
Oh my god.
Back then.
Didn't understand how bad 9/11 was going to be because, like, yeah, planes would just get held for hostage and it would be like, LOL, like a fun time and you'd be home for dinner and, like, tell a crazy story. And I just don't.
They didn't. So there was a hijacking in 1987 in California.
Yeah, hijack is the word I want to use,
not hostage. Yeah, well, there was a hijacking in 1987 in California on a small plane from, like, Los Angeles, San Francisco, where a disgruntled worker had the clearance to get on the plane, snuck on the plane, killed the pilots and just crashed the plane. Right? Yeah. Right? But, like, do you know how he was able to do that? Because when you get fired, they didn't used to take your credentials. So that they made a law, like, you gotta take their credentials. And then another similar one happened around the same time, and the person hadn't been fired, but the person had some issues, and they brought a weapon or something, and they didn't used to have to go to security. So they would just skip the security, and then when you see the workers go to security.
Like learning, like, through error, trial by error, like, right. Jesus Christ.
So they didn't have to go to security. You see them go through security now. The pilots, yeah. they skip the line, but they gotta go to security.
He's there.
Right, because, you know, you are at work, right? Otherwise they have to wait for, like, 40, are they gonna get paid for the 45 minutes they're waiting in the line, right?
Yeah.
And then they, not only that, but then after 9/11, only after 9/11 did they make it so, like, the cockpit door was, like, locked.
Oh, God. That's so dark. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, because that's how they got in. Yeah. Right? Like, they wouldn't, like, those people, no matter what happened, those people wouldn't have gotten into the, like, now, it can't happen. The people, first of all, they couldn't have gotten the weapons on the plane. Right? Because they had, like, box cutters. Couldn't get that on the plane. Second of all, they couldn't get through the door. So they could theoretically kill the flight attendants, but, like, they couldn't get through the door. Right? They just won't open. It's literally bulletproof. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, so that's why it hasn't happened. And I'm just like, don't you do that long?
Yeah.
And then it's things like.
They need someone like me, like, on the, you know, in the FAA to be like, okay, but here's how this could go wrong, and here's how that could go wrong, and here's how, like, if these two things went wrong, this is what I do just in my spare time. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And I needed someone with anxiety.
Yeah, the worst, the two worst plane crashes ever, which I'm kind of obsessed with, they happened around the same time in the mid-80s, right? One, where you're just like, how did this happen, you morons, right?
Oh, no.
Because it's just like, so, there was a bomb threat, not on the plane, but in one airport near a place. So, like, a plane that's supposed to land in this place, landed in this place. So it's on the taxi, mm-hmm. right? It's just sitting there. Another plane is leaving. Fog. They can't see each other. One plane is about to take off, and then it tries to stop, and, like, the plane basically cuts off, you know, the little, like, extra head of the 747.
Yeah.
Like, cuts off the top of the 747.
Oh, no.
And like, someone likes it. It's the worst plane crash ever because, like, there were two planes involved. The people who were on one of the planes, like, half of them got out because it was a fire rather than the plane. It's one of the other one, everybody died. Right?
Yes.
And, but it was two 747s. It was in the Canary Islands. And then the worst single airplane crash was, like, you know, the thing on the back of the plane where, like, the back wings where it's like this is the vertical stabilizer.
Uh-huh.
So like, if this isn't there, which why would it ever not be there? Mm-hmm. The plane can't control how high it is.
Oh, cool.
Right? But, like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Unless you spend 20, cause, like, planes most of the time are 20 years old. Like, these planes are all expensive and they need to repair them. You know, they keep these planes a long time, right? They upgrade the systems, but the physical planes, like, you can't just be making planes, right? And they just didn't repair it. And the vertical stabilizer flew off.
Oh, no.
But the worst thing, the plane, people are listening to this like, what is he talking about? Why is he talking about plane crashes? But, the vertical stabilizer flies off. This is Japan Airlines flight 123. And it, somehow went down.
No.
And then, like, it, like, did a backflip. Like it hit and then flipped over.
No.
Right. Oh, at like 500 miles an hour. Right. But there were two survivors. Like a little kid and somebody else. I can't remember how old the other person was, one of those little kids. The only thing is, they assumed there were no survivors, so they didn't go up until the morning. And several people died overnight because they were just laying there moaning.
That's
this,
crazy.
I'm just saying, how did people function back then? Because, like, I say all this about planes, but think about how bad cars were back then. I can barely park without the camera behind me. Right? Yeah, and like back then everything was manual. You couldn't see anything. You had to guess how fast you were going because it was just a little lever. Right? And like how did anybody do anything back then? I can't imagine. I don't want to get in a car now. Like back then people were like, yeah, you know, it's fine.
It's the same as anything. Like you don't know any better. I mean, it's like how all these plane crashes happen. Like you don't think that someone's going to like try to attack the pilots. People just, you don't think. Because it's never happened before. Why would you think it would happen?
Right. And everyone's always thinking backwards.
Yes. Again, but, this is why you need more people with anxiety in high-level positions.
Right. Exactly. But then if you get anxiety, they won't put you in a high-level position because you have anxiety.
Because then you can't make decisions.
Right.
You
know? I mean, that's
you need just a job that's like worst-case scenario thinker-upper.
Yeah.
That's
isn't
what
that
do.
What quality assurance is?
Actually true. That's maybe I should change careers. They say, like, if you do what you love, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but then if they don't listen to you, you'll feel worse.
Mm, that's true. But then you get to say, you would want to. Okay. You're right.
So, you know, I think about, I had to let go sometimes of the things that I'm worried about when I'm trying to tell people stuff. Because, like, I could design these tests for the students, the participants in my program. And sometimes they'll email because we'll put in some short answer things. But when you make a short answer quiz, you got to decide what are all the acceptable answers. Mm. Unless you want to hand grade it and it's an automatic system and I'm not hand grading anything because there's five different programs, right? And so if they don't get the point, they email me like, I put in this synonym. You should give me the points because the synonym isn't. I can be like, oh my God. Because my colleagues will sometimes be like, oh, they're very upset about it. And I'm like, what is going to happen to them if they don't get this full point for this quiz that I know? Like, can you just ask them what's going to happen? Because I assure you, nothing. And, you know, I've gotten to a better place in my life where, because I used to just like, oh my God, this is such a problem. And now I'm just like, is it though?
Yeah. I need to get to that space.
Yeah, I had to, you know, it was, I remember being really upset the first couple of times I was rejected from journals because I got accepted the first few times. Mm. And the first time I was rejected, I was like,
yeah, that was through your perception.
Right? And then like, but then, you know, I had more success. So I got clout, got the book deals and all this. And I'm just like, eh.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. And they're like, you should do this. And I'm like, what if I don't? Like, what if I
could count a point?
Don't do that? What if I actually don't do that? It's a much better place to be. So, you know, it's best Long Island is going to close it out because we have to get to the place. I mean, I think it's just interesting to me how quickly we ruled it out. Alyssa, for very practical reasons, she was like, those taxes are way too high.
Fair.
For what that's worth. And our taxes, because we're in Yonkers, which is an actual city and has more people, the taxes are actually fairly low.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking.
It's good.
We still have one of those, it's in between nothing, because New York City has an extra tax in your income.
I know. Right?
And Yonkers has one too, but it's not as big. Because it's an actual city, right? It's not like a town. So we don't have to deal with the NYC tax anymore. But the actual housing taxes aren't as high.
Mm-hmm.
So when I move, I have to tell my job, and then, like, I'll get slightly more money every month.
Hey.
Yeah. I was saying to Alyssa at some point, or was it somebody else? I don't know who I say things to, because sometimes I say things to Alyssa, she's like, you already told me. And she'll be like, I know. But I'm like, I don't know, I thought I said it to her. I don't know. I thought I said it to him. I don't know. But it's very important for me to say it again. I just don't know who. So I've realized when you get to a certain point career wise, and this is relevant to the housing thing, right? We just bought the house last week, so I don't really have much to say about it because nothing's really happened yet. But when you get to a point career wise, or you get to a point where you're kind of more settled, and I'm not saying everybody gets there, I'm saying, but if you get there, they start offering you shit.
Hmm.
And it's tempting. And some of it you do.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, you can skip, I mean, it's figuratively. You can skip lines, you know, not quite literally, although some, like, you can obviously just do, like, you, there are ways you can, like, you pay money, you skip the line at the airport, right? You know, the
right.
Clear or whatever, right? But
that,
like,
my global entry interview yesterday.
Right. So that, but for things that are not as straightforward as cash. We, you know, when we were going through the loan process, the lender the whole time was like, don't worry about it, you're going to get approved. Your ratio is this, right? And we did. And like for other people, they got to take on other conditions. The only conditions we had to get a certain amount of insurance, which makes sense because you should probably have an insured house. but, you know, we didn't have to, like, some of the conditions that they put on things, you know, they're, like, for example, the developers that I work with, they have to give personal guarantees for their deals, right? Obviously, we have to agree to pay the loan. That's not what I'm talking about. But, like, if you don't pay the loan, there's, not for us, but for the developers, and these much larger, like, they're developing something much more expensive than one house, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to guarantee it with mm-hmm. something, whether it's collateral or some other thing.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't have to give them collateral, right? Because they trust us. The
do
point is,
have to do that?
Some no,
I never heard of that.
Depend, no. Well, I'm talking about the developers and their much bigger projects.
Oh,
right? What I'm trying to say, and I'm not saying very well, is I'm just trying to use various examples to say society trusts you more when you get to a certain place.
Oh. Okay, yes, that I understand.
And it's really hard to turn down the things you get through that trust.
Yes.
And so this does circle back to the Long Island thing, which is that if you become a member of a community that is exclusive, which is to say they wanted you,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard, not for me, but for some, to say no to that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about being part of an exclusive community is keeping it exclusive.
Yeah.
So I can see when you get to a point where an exclusive community, be it a suburb or an enclave, not an enclave, I'm using that positively, or like a development says, why don't you come be one of us, or somebody sponsors you or recommends it, then it's really easy when they say, someone's applying, what do you think? And the implication or the direct order is, don't let them in. I can see how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen to me, not because I'm so morally pure, because I just don't live in that kind of development situation.
Okay. Yeah.
I just live in a house.
Yeah.
I will be. But, like, I can see how it happens. And it's, I think, a human nature thing, which is unfortunate, because, like, exclusivity feels kind of cool sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Facebook.
Yeah. It did. If you'd invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook. That's what he says. People want to date guys who go to Harvard. So anyways, good talking, mostly not about Long Island. So
there's not much to say. We covered it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we made our points. We talked about playing crashes, and we talked about what else did we talk about? We talked about a person I went on a date with when I was 18. We didn't really talk about her. We just talked about that day, right? I didn't say anything about her. And, you know, we talked about the small townness. We talked about the diversity that is Like, if you looked at the larger demographics, it seems diverse, but from moment to moment, we talked about serial killers.
Yeah.
For a brief moment there.
We hit it all.
So when you talk about Long Island, these are the things you gotta talk about.
Yes.
And then we ended on exclusivity. So thanks for coming. And, we should definitely do this again because it was fun. I will see you again at some point.